You're listening to Civic Media. You can tune into any of our live shows on any radio station across the state with the Civic Media app. Find us in your phone's app store and listen anytime, anywhere.
Hey, welcome back to John and Gordy in the Morning on the Civic Media Radio Network here on 92.7. As you've guessed by now, I'm not John, I'm not Gordy, I'm Matt Rothschild.
Really?
The guys are off this morning anyway. They've been covering the afternoon shift, so I'm subbing in for them today. Happy to be here with you, with Dom. You can join our conversation, 608-879-8255. Give us a call, send us a text, 608-879-8255. You can tell us who your favorite candidate is for governor. You can tell us your reaction to Donald Trump's treatment of reporters, especially women reporters, his cozying up to the Crown Prince of Saudi Arabia, the torturer and murderer. You can talk to us about birds, because in this half hour, we are going to be talking about a bill that's at the state capitol this morning. There's a hearing at 9 o'clock. I might run down there after the show and give them a piece of my mind because Republicans want to start hunting sandhill cranes here in Wisconsin. And with me to discuss that now is Ryan Michalesko. He's the communications and advocacy specialist for the International Crane Foundation up in Baraboo. Ryan, welcome to the John and Gordy Show.
Thanks for having me on, Matt. They're going to have to get you a jingle like that.
Yeah, I can't wait. I really appreciate you coming in, and I want to give you an opportunity to tell our listeners a little bit about the International Crane Foundation, which I was happy to visit for the first time in about 30 years last summer, and you've just got incredible exhibits up there, being able to see all the different kinds of cranes around the world. It's quite a treasure of Wisconsin. If you, the listener, haven't been up to Baraboo, to the International Crane Foundation, you got to get up there sometime.
Yeah, thanks again for having me on. You know, the International Crane Foundation is really a Wisconsin story at its heart. ICF was founded by two renowned ornithologists, Dr. George Archibald and Dr. Ron Sowie, who met studying at Cornell and decided to work on cranes together. Ron's family had a horse farm in Baraboo and offered to lease it to Ron and George for a dollar a year to start ICF and begin their work with cranes.
Well, that's a good price.
It really is. And of course, we've since expanded. You know, there's 15 species of cranes around the world. We have two here in North America. 10 of the 15 are threatened or endangered. The most abundant species, the sandhill crane, we're here to talk about today. And the other is the whooping crane, which is highly endangered. And we also have those here in North America.
Not only in North America, you have them here in Wisconsin. I don't know if I'm supposed to say it, but you can see them sometimes up at Horicon Marsh. Don't scold me now.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, whooping cranes are really special birds. There's only about 700 in the wild in all of North America. We're really fortunate that we have some here in Wisconsin. Like you said, ICF has been leading the reintroduction effort of the whooping crane and try to bring those birds back to the Midwest, the upper Midwest. In many ways, as a backup to that wild flock that has this really incredible migration from all the way in far north Canada to the Gulf Coast of Texas.
Down to Aransas there at the Gulf in Texas.
Exactly.
But I've seen whooping cranes in southern Columbia County in a farmer's wetland in the fall, not this fall, several falls ago when they were started their migration south. And they've just started their migration now. So keep your eyes out. There are still whooping cranes flying around Wisconsin, aren't there?
There are. Yes, there are. We've had some sightings this past weekend. We actually hosted our Great Midwest Crane Fest up at the Crane Foundation and the Aldo Leopold Foundation this past weekend. And welcomed a lot of people to our site and to Sauk County in Wisconsin. A lot of people from out of state were able to come and enjoy the cranes. So it was a really great opportunity, but they were here to see the sandhill cranes that we're here to talk about today.
So let's talk about this bill. What's wrong with it, in your opinion?
Let me give you a little bit of background. This is an issue that we've been dealing with for 12 years. It's the third time in 12 years that this bill's come forward, or similar bills. And for that time, you know, the folks bringing it forward have really made this issue about crop damage. Sandhill cranes do cause crop damage. There's no hiding that. And they can cause significant crop damage. And for a long time, that's been the excuse for this bill, why we need a hunting season. It's to solve crop damage. That's been pretty much the one talking point. And in reality, there's never been evidence that a hunting season is going to solve crop damage. And in fact, last year, the Grain Foundation and our expert researcher, who's going to testify this morning, Ann Lacey, served on the Legislative Study Committee on Sandhill Cranes down at the Capitol as well. And that committee met for 6 months to hear testimony, listen to experts come in from U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service. You know, we had former folks from the DNR. We had farmers on the committee. And, you know, overwhelmingly, that committee heard that there's no evidence that a hunting season is going to solve this issue. And that's why they just can't be linked together. It's not a good thing.
Is there a different solution for the crop damage that sandhill cranes cause?
Yeah, there is. And it's one that ICF started helping develop years and years ago with the field testing that we conducted in our Briggsville study area. And that's an area in central Wisconsin where we've been studying sandhill cranes for 30 plus years, banding them out in the field, monitoring them, seeing which territorial pairs are coming back, how many chicks are being laid. So we have a lot of data on these birds. And you're exactly right. There is that non-lethal deterrent. It's a seed treatment that goes on the corn. And basically, the cranes don't like the taste of it. They try the corn, they spit it out. We acknowledge that it's not an entirely perfect solution, but neither is a hunting season at all. So we really can't tie these two things together.
It's not entirely perfect because it costs a lot, or what's the downside?
Yeah, exactly. You know, it's an added cost for the farmer, and farmers have enough costs. So that's what we've been working to do, and what we think is the most meaningful solution here is that the state's able to provide those farmers the support that they say they need.
Now, you know, if I'm listening here in Dane County to you from the International Crane Foundation talk about this, and I'm a skeptical person, I'm going to say, look, the sandhill crane population has just gone through the roof. You can throw a rock and hit one if you're walking down the sidewalk. The population has grown tremendously, it seems, from a casual observer's perspective over the last 30 years. You know, what's wrong with a little bit of hunting?
Yeah, well, you know, let's go back even a little bit further than that. In the 1940s, Aldo Leopold, renowned conservationist here in Wisconsin, estimated that there were only about 20 pairs of sandhill cranes left in this state.
Really?
So in less than 100 years, we've made a remarkable comeback. But that doesn't mean they're out of the water. There's still a lot of threats that these cranes are facing. A really new and novel threat is highly pathogenic avian influenza. This is something that cranes around the world are being hit by.
Is this the same bird flu that's hitting chickens and turkeys?
It's similar bird flu, H5N1, but highly pathogenic avian influenza is really carried and really can harm wild bird flocks. What we've seen just in the last month in Europe, they're experiencing an outbreak in common cranes, which are very similar to sandhill cranes in their ecology, their threats, and how they interact with humans. And they've lost 35 to 40,000 birds just in 1 month.
Wow.
And in the spring in Indiana, Tennessee, Kentucky, those states a little bit further south during migration, we lost up to 4% of the eastern population, which is the population that Wisconsin's a part of.
So that's a big number. What's 4% of that population equal to?
That's about 3,000 to 4,000 birds. So when we only have a population of 100,000 birds in this flyway, and you know, a lot of people equate sandhill crane population to the total population, but the central flyway, which most people think of, that's the one that goes notoriously through the Platte River in Nebraska, that's about 10 to 12 times the size of our population. So,
you know, I went to the Platte River in Nebraska once.
Isn't it incredible?
It's incredible, but I was about 2 weeks early. It was a cold and slow spring, so I missed the massive numbers of sandhill cranes. I did see some. Mostly I saw snow geese. There were snow geese everywhere. But,
yeah.
But you know, I'd never seen a sandhill crane until I came to Wisconsin 45 years ago, and I just fell in love with the sandhill cranes. And, you know, I've been a bird watcher since I was 5 years old, 4 years old, now I'm 67. I always wanted to see a sandhill crane. I always wanted to see a whooping crane. I had a book about the whooping crane population flying down to Aransas Wildlife Refuge in Texas, sitting next to my bed when I was a little kid. And I've been down to Aransas to see the whooping cranes there, though just my luck, I was sick that day. So anyway, I've always been worried about the whooping crane population. And one of the things that worries me about this sandhill crane bill is not so much that it's going to impair the population of sandhill cranes, though it might, but that it could, you know, impair the population of whooping cranes because some hunters who are out there, you know, may mistake a sandhill crane for a whooping crane, or they may be migrating together, which they do sometimes, right? And then the population of whooping cranes is jeopardized.
Yeah, that's absolutely right. And, you know, on the sandhill front, we have a lot of evidence, having studied these birds for 30-plus years right here in Wisconsin, that we think they could be nearing their carrying capacity. Just this year, our data is showing that, and this could be because of the HPAI outbreak in the states earlier this year, but 32% fewer sandhill cranes on the territories that we study this year, and only 1 in 5 territories produced a chick. And we think those are really important numbers because cranes aren't ducks or geese. They're very different. They're long-lived. They take a long time to successfully mate and breed, an even longer time to successfully fledge young. And that means their numbers just don't rebound like they could. If we have a hunting season in the state on their critical breeding grounds, you know, that could have significant effect. What happens here affects the whole population.
And I saw a press release you put out. It showed that actually a couple years back in Oklahoma, hunters did kill 4 whooping cranes.
Yeah, that's something we've heard time and time again. You know, this was even testimony provided to the Legislative Study Committee that no real hunter, no good sportsman would kill a whooping crane. But accidents happen, and unfortunately it only takes one. You're right. In 2023, 4 Oklahoma hunters pled guilty to killing 4 whooping cranes in 2021. And that's really devastating. That was about 1% of the wild flock in that Aransas wood buffalo population. But here in Wisconsin, we only have about 70 whooping cranes in the whole eastern population. The loss of one would be years and years of setback.
And, you know, I'm not against hunting, period, but it just doesn't seem that sporting to me to be hunting a bird that is that big. I mean, their wingspan are, 6 feet, 7 feet. And they're slow flyers. I mean, that can't be a tough shot, seeing these giant birds flapping their wings or gliding ever so slowly in the sky in a flock. It can't be that tough a shot or that invigorating or exhilarating a hunt.
Yeah, you know, I don't think that's what this is about at all. I grew up as a hunter, and I just think that there are some things that don't need to be hunted, and sandhill cranes are one of them.
Ryan, what do you hunt?
I grew up hunting turkey, deer, big sportsman, but I'm a proud birder now and spend a lot of time out in the field enjoying and observing birds. And you know, that's another thing that maybe we can talk about after the break. But there's a lot of good numbers about how birders really contribute to the economy, and the fiscal nature of this bill is also important to discuss.
You know, I'd like to pursue that because birding in Wisconsin, I just found out yesterday, 1 out of 3 Wisconsinites is a bird watcher.
It's an incredible
boom. Twice the national rate. We're one of the highest percentage of bird watchers in the country. We'll be talking a little bit more about birds, the Sandhill Crane Bill. I'm speaking with Ryan Michalescu, Communications and Advocacy Specialist for the great organization Up in Baraboo, a real treasure of Wisconsin. It's the International Crane Foundation. I'm Matt Rothschild, subbing in for John and Gordy on John and Gordy in the Morning here on WMDX, the Civic Media Radio Network, and we'll be right back.
You're listening to Civic Media. Stay up to date on the latest news and information for your local community and Wisconsin by signing up for our free email newsletter. Visit civicmedia.us/email to get started.
That's the sound of sandhill cranes. I'm Matt Rothschild, subbing in for John and Gordy on John and Gordy in the Morning here on the Civic Media Radio Network, WMDX here in Madison, 92.7. We're listening to that voice of the sandhill crane because I'm speaking with Ryan Michalescu, the Communications and Advocacy Specialist for the International Crane Foundation up in Baraboo, and I urge you to go visit there if you haven't yet. It's a terrific place. The phone number to call if you want to join the conversation or text us, 608-879-8255. We did get a text from Steve in Mount Horeb who says, I've been hunting all my life. I'm not going to eat a sandhill crane. People are just going to shoot them for fun and leave them lay. This is a bad idea, he says, to open a hunting season for cranes, and I agree. Dom, our great producer, Ryan, here, asked at break, what is the difference between a sandhill crane and a whooping crane? Do you want to take that?
Yeah, I would say here in Wisconsin, the biggest consideration between the two is their rarity. You know, endangered whooping cranes and sandhill cranes both were reduced to really low numbers in the past century. And sandhill cranes didn't get quite as low, so they've been able to make a much more successful comeback. But whooping cranes lost most of their genetic material. There are no more whooping cranes left here in the Midwest. And of course, only a handful left in that larger wild flock in the central U.S. And when a population gets that low, it's hard to bring them back. You know, you need genetic diversity in a flock, and the loss of just one bird loses a lot of that genetic diversity. But in terms of their physical structure, sandhill cranes are gray birds. They're a little bit smaller than whooping cranes. Whoopers are very tall, bright white, black wingtips with a bright red head. And they're beautiful birds. They really are.
Yeah. So if they were flying, would you be able to tell the difference, or is it you would be just slightly?
It can be hard to tell them apart, especially mm-hmm. when you only have one whooping crane, a big flock of sandhills. It can be challenging. It's not easy.
And some sandhill cranes are lighter gray than darker gray or rusty gray.
Exactly. There's a lot of variation in their coloring, especially, you know, from juvenile to adult and from months of the year, you know, when they're breeding versus not.
But the whooping crane is pure white, except for the little tips of black on the wings. They're white as Ryan's dress shirt right now. They're that color white. And so if you see one, you'll know it for sure, especially if you see it pretty close. But, you know, the problem is you got a flock of 20 sandhill cranes and two whooping cranes, and you're shooting at the flock. You know, you can nail one.
Yeah, and think about the times of the day that you're hunting, early morning, you know, low light. It can be hard to tell them apart, and misidentification is a big issue. That's what the hunters pled guilty to in Oklahoma. And just since the elk hunt in Wisconsin was established, 9 elk have mistakenly been shot during deer season. So, you know, misidentification happens.
Yeah, that's not a big herd either. Yeah. So you mentioned before the break, Ryan, how birders contribute to the state, or you wanted to talk about that, so go.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service about every 5 years does a national recreation survey where they break down all of the different recreation types. And two of the big ones are, of course, wildlife watching, birding, and hunting. But what we hear a lot of times is how much hunters contribute to the economy. And I think it's time that we talk about how much birders and wildlife watchers contribute to the economy. Wildlife watchers, there are 148 million, which is about 10 times hunters, 14.4 million. Birders, 96.3 million. In terms of revenues generated by birders, 250 million, which is about 5 times that of hunters at 45 million.
That's a lot. Do you have it broken down in Wisconsin, or is that going to take a little more research?
That'll take a little more research, but, you know, Fish and Wildlife Service, if you're listening, we'd love those numbers.
Get on it. We want them. You wanted to talk a little bit more about this bill that is in the state legislature today. There's a hearing at 9 o'clock up at the Capitol about this bill that Republicans have introduced that would allow the hunting of sandhill cranes in Wisconsin. You mentioned there's some fiscal problems with that.
Yeah, you know, this bill goes back to the Legislative Study Committee, which along party lines voted this bill out and referred it to the Sporting Heritage Committees, the Assembly, and the Senate. And today the Senate's bringing that forward for a hearing. That's in room 201 Southeast at the Capitol at 9 a.m. And, of course, we invite you to attend, hear the testimony from all of the different groups, and, of course, share your own if you'd like. But the big problem with both of these bills is they're not fiscally responsible. So aside from all of the issues with the population, aside from all of the issues with misidentifying whooping cranes, aside from bird flu, these bills are going to lose money. They're going to cost the Wisconsin taxpayer. The DNR fiscal estimate that looks into these bills, they do this for all the legislation that comes through the Capitol. They refer it out to an agency to do the math. SB 112, which is the bill that came out of the study committee, which had a lot of great things in it for farmers, although they shouldn't be tied to a hunt, that bill would lose $400,000 annually. However, one of the things we're going to contend with today is a substitute amendment introduced by Senator Staffschult, the chair of the Sporting Heritage Committee, who's having the hearing today, pulls out all of that farmer funding, reduces the permit fees, and will lose probably about $1.6 million a year. So really, taxpayers are paying for a few hunters that want to hunt cranes, not the other way around.
I'm speaking with Ryan Michalescu. He's the communications and advocacy specialist for the International Crane Foundation up in Baraboo. If someone's been listening and they want to know more about the International Crane Foundation, how do they find out more? If they want to support the great work that the International Crane Foundation does in preserving these tremendous species, iconic species, how do they help?
Yeah, the best thing they can do is go to www.savingcranes.org. You can read about our great work there. You can become a member. And today, the most important thing you can do is show up at 9 a.m. at the Capitol Room, 201 Southeast, for this hearing.
And the website again, savethecranes.org?
Savingcranes.org.
Savingcranes.org. There you go. That's the International Crane Foundation, one of the great treasures of the state of Wisconsin. Ryan Michalesko, thanks so much for being my guest today. It's great meeting you.
Yeah, thanks for having me on.
And we'll be back in just a couple of minutes with Jeff Mandel, the head of Law Forward, this great nonprofit legal organization that is fighting the anti-democratic forces in Wisconsin and in the country. So you'll want to stay tuned for that. We'll be right back on John and Gordy in the Morning on the Civic Media Radio Network. Right here, 92.7 Radio Network. I'm Matt Rothschild. John and Gordy are doing the afternoon shift today, so I'm subbing in for them this morning. Happy to do so. I'm glad they invited me. I'm glad Dom invited me. And you can join our conversation at 608-879-8255. That's 879-8255. We did get a text from Joel in Madison wondering where is it legal to hunt sandhills and what the population of sandhill cranes in the Platte River, what that population is. It's tens of thousands to hundreds of thousands is my memory on that. Where is it legal? I just looked it up. Alabama, Alaska, Arizona, Colorado, Idaho, Kansas, Kentucky, Minnesota. That's a surprise. Montana, New Mexico, North Dakota, Oklahoma, South Dakota, Tennessee, Texas, Utah, and Wyoming. A lot of states are hunting the sandhill crane. And when I was out west once, we were on a road trip and we went into a bar and there was a sign about the sandhill crane hunt. I just couldn't believe it. But then, you know, it's a thing for some of these states. But it's a real question of preserving a species, actually preserving two species because of the danger of hitting a whooping crane. And I didn't realize how short the population of sandhill cranes was in Wisconsin back in Aldo Leopold's day. So that was kind of interesting. And again, the International Crane Foundation, a great place. With me now, changing subjects back to democracy subjects, Jeff Mandel, head of Law Forward, a pro-democracy law firm here in Wisconsin that's just a few years old, but just done incredible work on a whole broad range of pro-democracy issues. Jeff, thanks for coming in.
Thanks for having me. Great to be here.
You know, I was at your website yesterday, and I saw that you followed, you and Russ Feingold, former U.S. Senator Russ Feingold, filed an amicus brief in a campaign finance lawsuit that I was not that familiar with, so I wanted to bring you on and have you talk about that.
Yeah, it's a really important case. And we in Wisconsin have a particularly profound understanding of this. What happened is that Vice President J.D. Vance, before he became vice president, when he was still in the Senate, he brought a lawsuit challenging a provision of federal campaign finance law that limits how much money individuals can give to a political party and how much money the political party can then give to an individual campaign. This is part of longstanding campaign finance law, part of the McCain-Feingold bill.
So that's where Russ comes in.
Exactly. And what we did with this brief is we explained to the court, which is almost certainly going to rule for the National Republican Senatorial Committee, which is the plaintiff here, we explained that you only have to look at Wisconsin to see what the consequences of this are. Because here in Wisconsin, we have limits on how much you can give a state candidate. The federal limit's around $3,000. The Wisconsin limit for a statewide candidate is $20,000.
Yeah, it's crazy.
And
but even crazier.
Here in Wisconsin, we eliminated, while Governor Walker was in charge, we eliminated the exact kind of limits that they're talking about here so that an individual can give unlimited funds to a political party and a political party can give unlimited funds to a candidate even in a nonpartisan election. And so if you look at our Supreme Court elections here in Wisconsin that over the last decade have gotten just absurdly expensive, from elections that a decade ago were maybe $6 or $10 million total spending to one earlier this year that was over $115 million in total spending. And we were able to show, regardless of candidate, regardless of party, specific times that wealthy, I mean, really, really wealthy, I'm not talking about people with money, I'm talking about the top 0.1%, maxed out to the candidates. That is, they and their spouse or others in their family gave that $20,000 limit, and then at the same time made an even larger contribution to the party that supported that candidate. And lo and behold, a couple of days later, a contribution from the party in almost the same amount went straight to the campaign. And it's fueling this explosion in campaign spending, and it's just not good for democracy. It's been bad in Wisconsin, and we wanted to make sure the court understood that.
And it's a bad in a bipartisan way. I mean, they're super rich Democrats and super rich Republicans who are doing it, and just makes a mockery of any campaign finance limits. If the limit is $20,000 to your favorite candidate for state Supreme Court, and then you want to get, and then you give $20 million to the party that then turns around and gives that $20 million to the candidate, why have a $20,000 limit in donations? It's absurd. But the answer isn't to get rid of all contribution limits. It's to not allow those transfers that you're filing this amicus brief about. But look, in Wisconsin, on the Republican side anyway, we have people like Diane Hendricks and Dick Eline just giving huge amounts to outside, so-called outside groups, but they're hand in glove with the campaigns. And, you know, we saw what Elon Musk did here, too, in trying to influence a Supreme Court race. So it's a huge problem. You say the court is going to rule against you. It's just going to drive another stake in the heart of McCain-Feingold.
I think that's right. And the court, the federal courts, and particularly the U.S. Supreme Court, have just been chipping away at that law since it was passed. And this obsession that there is no difference between money and political speech is wrongheaded, and it's really, really harming our democracy.
And we're going to need a new Supreme Court, or an expanded U.S. Supreme Court, that's going to go back to that Citizens United decision and then a dissent by Justice John Paul Stevens, who talked about that fallacy, and we got to overturn these decisions. But that's a way off.
Yes, we exist in a world right now where there is a solid majority, a super majority on the U.S. Supreme Court that unfortunately is really hostile to democracy.
And so, what is the horizon on this change that we need to make?
Well, I think the horizon is pretty long. Either we need to amend the U.S. Constitution to change the way our Supreme Court is structured, and amending the U.S. Constitution is a difficult and lengthy process, or we're going to need to see a sea change in the membership on the court, and that too is going to be a difficult and lengthy process. We haven't had a majority of justices appointed by a Democratic president in 80-some years, and I think we'll hit a century before there's a real chance of that.
Yeah, this is a long way off, unfortunately. But there is a movement to amend the U.S. Constitution that says corporations aren't persons and money isn't speech. There are a lot of activists here in Wisconsin with Wisconsin United to Amend and other groups that are pushing that. It's a national movement, needs to be supported, even though it's long-term. Rome wasn't built in a day, so got to remember that. While I have you here, Jeff Mandel of Law Forward, got to ask you about Trump's pardon last week, sweeping pardon of anybody who was involved in the effort to overturn the 2020 elections.
It's deeply, deeply distressing. We know that, you know, on Inauguration Day, President Trump pardoned everyone who was involved in the January 6th insurrection. Now, you know, recently, we don't know exactly when, but within the last couple of weeks, they've pardoned all the people who created the conditions for that January 6th insurrection. And what I mean is the people behind the fraudulent elector scheme. Recall that on January 6th, as the protesters were breaking into the Capitol, they were there to try to pressure then-Vice President Pence. And what they wanted him to do was to count these fake elector certificates. If there were no fake certificates, there really wouldn't have been an insurrection. There would have been nothing to demand. And what we showed through our litigation here in Wisconsin is that the entire scheme, the entire notion of these fake certificates began in Wisconsin, was executed here in Wisconsin, and then spread to other states. It wouldn't have happened anywhere if it hadn't happened here.
You blew the lid on this thing. You were there before anybody else.
We were. We were pushing this well before even there was a January 6th committee in Congress to investigate this. As early as February of 2021, we were pushing here in Wisconsin to have investigations and to condemn this just profoundly anti-democratic behavior. What you had was 10 individuals, the designated representatives, if the Trump-Pence campaign had been reelected. These were the 10 individuals who had been designated to cast Wisconsin's Electoral College votes. And they decided that they knew better than 3.3 million of their neighbors. And that even though Biden had won the election in Wisconsin, they were going to sign something that said, no, 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 we are the true and correct electors, and Wisconsin votes for Trump. It's really just shocking and completely unprecedented. Nothing like this had happened in American history. And it is disappointing and dangerous that the president is pardoning these folks and trying to say that this is okay.
And those fake electors, they did that even after the Wisconsin Supreme Court had said the challenge to the election was invalid and that Biden was the person who won the race here in Wisconsin.
That's correct. And one of the things that some of them have said at times is, well, we didn't know. We were doing this just in case. But it simply isn't true. One of those fraudulent electors from La Crosse, a gentleman named Bill Feehan, he recorded a podcast later that week where he talked about being in the room together at the Republican Party headquarters before they went across the street to the Capitol and how deflating it was and how sad they all were when the news came that the Supreme Court of Wisconsin had affirmed this and that this was over. They still went across the street. They still had this meeting. They still sent this stuff to Washington. They still in January tried to get it directly into the hands of Ron Johnson to get it to Vice President Pence that day. They just kept persisting. They would not accept the will of the voters.
And you exposed all that at Law Forward, and you sent letters to DA Ishozan here in Dane County, to Attorney General Josh Call, urging an investigation. The DA, as far as I can tell, didn't do anything. Correct me if I'm wrong. And the Attorney General didn't go after the false electors, but ultimately did go after a couple of the lawyers.
Correct. It took almost 4 years, but last summer, the summer of 2024, Attorney General Call did file charges against three lawyers who were ringmasters of this, and that prosecution is ongoing. It is unaffected by the president's pardon. He can only pardon people for federal offenses. He cannot pardon or stop state investigations. And so that prosecution is ongoing, and we are hopeful that it will yield a good result.
And you also had a successful civil suit, though. Talk about that a little bit.
We did. We brought the first in the nation civil suit against the fraudulent electors. And we were able, using that, to get information and to reveal how this really had started here in Wisconsin. We wound up settling that case so that we could make that information public. And we could, before the 2024 election, make sure that everyone understood exactly what had happened and how. But those folks promised not to be electors again, and they promised not to do anything like this again.
And they admitted that Biden was legitimate president, too.
Yes, they did.
Well, I just greatly admire the work that you're doing over there at Law Forward. If someone's listening now and wants to support you, it's getting on donation time. End of the year fundraising. I'm sure you're needing some help. We all need some help, especially the great nonprofits in Wisconsin that are working for democracy. How could someone support Law Forward?
Go to lawforward.org/donate. We are a 501c3 nonprofit, nonpartisan organization. Donations are fully tax deductible. And you can see all that we're doing.
Cool. We'll be right back. Stay tuned.
You're listening to Civic Media. Find the latest news, information, and archives of all your favorite shows on the Civic Media website, civicmedia.us.
Hey, Matt Rothschild here. I love that song. Thanks for listening to John and Gordy in the morning. John and Gordy will be on this app, so I'm subbing for them this morning, and I've had a lot of fun doing so. Thanks for listening. I'm here with our great producer, Dom Lee. It's been quite a morning, Dom.
It really has. It really has. I'm feeling up, though. I'm feeling ready to go. I didn't have any energy drinks this morning. Thank the Lord. And I don't plan on. So it's been a great morning, though, Matt. Thank you for coming on.
You know, I've enjoyed our guests. I want to thank Nick Ramos of the Wisconsin Democracy Campaign, Ryan Michalesko of the International Crane Foundation up in Baraboo. Jeff Mandela was just in here from Law Forward. Thank you, Dom. It's always fun working with you, either on the podcast, Wisconsin Forward, or here subbing in as I do occasionally. I want to thank John and Gordy, too, for giving me this opportunity. It's always a pleasure for me to be on Civic Media. I believe in the mission of Civic Media, so I appreciate that opportunity. You can join our conversation here, 608-879-8255, if you want to get in on the talk here. We've got a call from Dick of Madison. Dick, what's on your mind?
Can I go back to birds for a minute?
Sure, please do.
You would have loved the first house I had. I lived in Lost City in the Arboretum. My kids grew up there, and I'm telling you, we've seen everything you could imagine. Egrets, sandhill cranes, turkeys towards the end were starting to take over, and every other kind of critter down there, coyotes. It was just crazy.
I mean, the Arboretum is a real treasure. When I moved to Madison, 45 years ago, and then got married, I was hoping to move into the Arboretum just for that reason, just because the birds and wildlife are great there, Dick. So thanks so much for the call. I want to continue the conversation about birds for a second, because this winter should be a good winter for what we call winter finches, little birds and medium-sized birds coming down from Canada, because the food supply, the seed supply, is diminished up there. So there are reports of evening grosbeaks coming down from Canada. I saw one report that they've come as south as Sauk County. I would love to see an evening grosbeak here in Dane County. Evening grosbeaks are the cousin to the rose-breasted grosbeak, which you'll see in the springtime in May and June in Wisconsin. But they're a little bit bigger. They have different colors. They're yellow, black, and white with a huge beak, hence the name. And usually I see them up in Minocqua, Boulder Junction occasionally, but there's a big migration coming south. So let's take a listen to the voice of the evening grosbeak. They come in flocks and usually make a lot of noise. That's sometimes how you will figure out they're there in the first place. Here is the song, or the cry, of the evening grosbeak. So that's something to be watchful for. There are other finches like redpolls, which is a tiny little finch-like bird with a black cap and a red throat. They've been seen in Dane County. Pine siskins is like a little female goldfinch with gold wing bars.
What is it, pine siskin?
Pine siskin.
Wow.
They're coming down also. And then a lot of times people here in Dane County have white-breasted nut hatches. That's a common nut hatch. But there's a smaller one that comes down from Canada, which is called the red-breasted nuthatch. And so they are being seen. I've seen them at my feeder here in Dane County. So look for a smaller nuthatch than usual, with a slightly different coloration. You might think, boy, what is that? Is that just a regular nuthatch? No, it's a red-breasted nuthatch. So it's going to be a good winter for these funky birds, these Canadian finches, as I call them. You know, every time I get to guest host a show on Civic Media, I like to talk about birds, but I also like to talk about poetry just a little bit and leave you with a verse or two. So here is a famous Shakespearean sonnet about the fall and about getting older, which I am. And so I just want to give it a quick read, if you'll bear with me. Sonnet 73 from William Shakespeare. That time of year when thou mayest in me behold, when yellow leaves are none or few, to hang upon those boughs which shake against the cold, bare ruined choirs where late the sweet birds sang. In me thou seest the twilight of such day as after sunset fadeth in the west, which by and by black night doth take away. Death's second self, that seals up all in rest. In me thou seest the glowing of such fire that on the ashes of his youth doth lie, as the deathbed whereon it must expire, consumed with that which it was nourished by. This thou perceivest, which makes thy love more strong, to love that well, which thou must leave ere long. I've always loved that sonnet by William Shakespeare, that's sonnet 73. Consumed with that which it was nourished by is an incredible line that has stuck in my head since I first read that sonnet when I was in college. We have a couple texts come in from listeners. Mark says, growing up in Douglas County, he always had evening grosbeaks in the winter at his feeders. A good point, Mark, and he has both of his nut hatches on his feeder right now. I love that. Talking about feeding evening grosbeaks, they love black sunflower seeds. So do the nuthatches. They love black sunflower seeds. For the finches, that is the pine siskins and the red poles, Niger seed. Get the Niger seed out there. They love that. And sometime in the winter when it's cold out, throw some suet on the ground, not just hanging on a basket. Throw it on the ground for the birds to eat that can't get on the feeders that the woodpeckers are hogging.
I know so much about birds now, Matt. I know so much about birds.
I'm telling you, Dom, I'm a bird evangelist. So there you have it. I want to thank everyone for calling, for listening, for texting, thanking our guests again. I want to thank you again, Dom. I really enjoy working with you. And I enjoy the opportunity to be on WMDX and to be on the Civic Media Radio Network. I'll catch up with you next time.
The national news cycle never stops, but it can be hard to find news about your local community. Civic Media is dedicated to providing quality local and state news coverage across Wisconsin. With the Civic Media app, you can get notifications about local stories that matter to you and your community. Find the free Civic Media app in your phone's app store and choose notifications from the menu to tell us what kind of news you want to hear about.